From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment, the home edition. You know that by now. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest is always nice to have somebody come back. When she was last here for her second feature, The Writer, apparently it's when she made the connection to get to work on what is now her new feature, Nomadland, when she connected with the film's star and producer, Frances McDormand. Of course, I'm talking to director Chloe Zhao. Chloe, thanks so much for coming back.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
It's so interesting watching these three movies together, your three films, because I guess if I was thinking about your trust immediately in your audiences, because so often you start a movie and you let us wait before the lead character actually speaks.
You're right. Yes, I think just because, you know, I make films of places that don't usually get a cinematic treatment. So it's always nice to ease people in. Give them a moment and just step into the space and set the expectation of the film, the pacing of the film. Not a bad thing.
Well, I guess I find myself thinking too, having talked to you a little bit, that I think you tend to create characters and leads who are kind of like you. They're observers. So we're taking the world in the way that they are. So you're introducing us to their point of view and letting us know they're going to be watching the world as much as they'll be participating in it.
I think we don't listen enough these days. Don't we? Like, there's a lot of talking, not enough listening. And when I go into communities or lifestyles that aren't my own, that research process, I had to do a lot of listening. And it's just always feel quite natural to me to create characters that are listeners. The audience can step into these worlds that are foreign and strange to them.
You so often use like natural sound rather than even using music as a cue at the opening a lot of these movies. And I'm just really fascinated by the idea that you started this way and you're working this way now. You're basically saying to your audience, just take your time, take a deep breath, because that's what we're going to do here. I'm not going to hit you over the head with this. I'm not going to force you to do something. I'm going to let you relate to my character, because you're going to have to give in to nature in the same way these characters kind of give in to nature.
Yes, I think that came out of the choice of whose perspective are we seeing this film from. And sometimes I worry that the danger of making a film about, say, the Badlands of South Dakota, about Brady, but through my perspective, as opposed to let the audience experience a sunrise in the Badlands through Brady's perspective. And in order to do that, the film itself has to really get into the essence of how Brady feel, smell, and hear and see this landscape. So it's not just about studying them and putting them on screen for an anthropological reason, but to let the audience truly experience their life experiences.
We're talking about this idea of trust, and you have to do a lot of trusting when you're doing something that you do, which is to bring people who aren't professional actors into the stories. And you've cast them in your leads, and this time, although the star is not that, the movie is almost entirely populated with people who weren't actors, and each of them has a very different speaking rhythm. You give each of them time, because the thing I would say about your movies, and especially this one, is they're about the pride that people take in their lives and in their unconventional lives.
I think there's an oral tradition in the culture of the road where people sit around the fire with strangers and they tell stories. I get that sense when I am traveling, when I was traveling for my first two films, and just a stranger welcome you. They tell you everything because they never want to see you again. And sometimes that's easier than to tell something to someone who you're going to see them in a coffee shop the next day. So that's why there is all these stories, you know, travelers documenting all these amazing stories about people they never see again. And I kind of wanted to have that feeling in the film where you sit across from someone. You cannot deny it at all. There's no tricks. The camera isn't you know, we aren't opening the van up so you can put the camera in different angles and to make the scene more dynamic that way. But you're just sitting there across from the fire and you're listening. And there is something very powerful about that. And then you move on. You never see that person again. I think for a road movie, it was definitely something I was interested in portraying.
I think it's interesting, too, because you have somebody with the kind of presence that Frances McDormand has. Just having her listen to somebody else automatically confers a kind of authority on that person in a really subconscious way, doesn't it?
Well, 'cause what it is, I think, is people have to trust that you're not coming into their lives to tell them how they should live. I think that's a big one, especially for people from marginalized communities or on the periphery of society. And you have to sort of go in with curiosity and some reverence as well, regardless whether you think everything they do is right or wrong. And just connect with, I know it's cliche to say, but connect on a human level. You will have a lot in common with that person because you were all a child at one point and definitely all had a heartbreak before. So I think that's the bottom line.
Well, it's the treatment, I guess, as our old friend Chloe Zhao, whose new film as director is the adaptation of Nomadland. And this is my favorite part of the show. I get to ask you to tell the audience what the movie's about.
Oh, boy. I'm so bad at telling this. Sometimes after I did it, people look at me, that's not the movie.
Okay, see, this is what I like so much about talking to you, is you make these movies. You make these movies that they're pretty simple to describe in one way and impossible to describe another. It really is a road trip and certainly a look at this country. And you've done that before because there is this aspect to the way that you like to photograph these spaces that is about the humbling power of nature. And again, at some point, people submitting to it. Your lead character, Fern, played by Fran McDormand. Again, it's just incredible to watch because to see her, like when she's listening, we see Fern listening to Swanky talk to her about how to handle her car, her van, about how she should keep it clean, how she should detail it. Again, this other thing that runs through your movies, and I wonder how much this comes from you, is again about the pride that people take in the space that's around them. And Fern takes a lot of pride in this space that she's made for herself in this van that she's given a name. And so many of the other characters have too. And we can go back to Brady and the writer. So many of these characters that you are interested in as a creator, people who take pride and invest a lot of themselves in the immediate space around them.
That's an interesting observation. I think it's this type of individualism, the sense of self, whether it's an illusion or it's real, that I find my characters hold on to. You know, my cowboy outfit, my horse, my van, and my father, the place my father left me. I think it's people who might not naturally have a strong sense of who they are, but they grab a hold on to an identity that they think is literally a lifeline for them. I myself come through quite a lot of different versions of that. And and also just being very specific. I like films that has these specific details.
Well, you were saying you've kind of lived your life a lot like that yourself. I mean, because that's a really interesting thing to hear.
Yeah, I've gone through different phases. You know, some years I was a cowgirl, some years I was a Rastafarian, you know, just different phases. Some years I was into... It's true. The people who know me for over a decade would say, yeah, you've changed a lot. For people who are chasing the horizon, sometimes I think they're just chasing for themselves. They're chasing themselves. They're trying to figure out who they are in this world. I look at a young kid like Derek, who's been hopping trains since he was like 17, 18 year old. He's talking about the Western wind and the horizon he's chasing. I look at him, I feel like he's also trying to figure out who he is. That's why I think the road is usually a story of the road, of a young person story. That's why this book was very interesting to me, because I didn't think from the perspective of someone in the twilight of their years who has had everything society has put on them and they have put on themselves about who they are, both physical and in terms of relationships and spirituality, emotionally, and to take that all away, whether it's by force, it's taken from them, or they give that up, and then go find themselves again beyond the horizon at the twilight of their life. It's a very interesting thing that drew me to the project.
I think it's interesting, too, because the visual cues we get, like when there are younger people around, as long as you're talking about Rastafarians, we can see visually that they're different, you know, that they have dreads. And their worldview, we can see just in the way that they look. And that's fascinating to me. You can really draw that kind of generational line just by seeing the way people dress themselves and then the way they do their hair.
That's a generational thing. You know, that's a baby boomer generation. They were all told to kind of to fit in. You know, that first generation is out. They're the most hardworking, responsible generation of Americans. That's why they're such a popular recruit to work in these seasonal jobs. The young folks, the millennials, are not showing up the next day. But Swanky, Linda May, Bob Wells, and Fern, they're extremely responsible. They're very humble and they're very hardworking and they don't always ask questions. So that generation, to see their dreams first, you know, the kind of trust they have to their country and the system and the government, and to see that taken away from them is a really heartbreaking thing.
It really is. We should take a break. We'll have more talk about Rastafarian here with my guest, director Chloe Zhao. After the break, her newest film as director is the terrific new film Nomadland. It's the treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. My guest, who's, I guess, will be then marrying into the Marley family very soon, is Chloe Zhao, her new film as director. Is Nomadland. There's something I want to talk to you about here too, which is to say that your films are also often about people in recovery from physical or emotional trauma. And I wonder if that's one of the things that attracted you to the material in Nomadland, because the whole book is about people in one way or another telling us about how they're dealing with this and using road as a kind of a way to connect with something bigger. I'm guessing when Fran McDormand started to talk to you about this and told you about the book, if you hadn't read it already, you thought, well, this is something I know. This is something I understand.
I think I'm really interested in capturing human resilience. You know, how do we overcome? Because life is hard. It's like we're, maybe because I come from the Buddhist tradition, like from my country, but yes, you're born to the world to suffer. I see that in whether it's a teen, you know, someone as young as Brady and as old as Swanky and Bob Wells, there's something they're dealing with that they're trying to overcome, and to show the audience that journey, whether they resolve, they completely heal or not, but to show the actual doing of healing, of perseverance, I think is a really good thing, you know, to capture that on screen. And also, I feel like this country, in terms of the road and nature, I think this country is so young. It has always been a struggle between man and nature with this nation, especially about conquering the land, but at the same time, like being part of it. And I think how much we're trying to fight against the natural rhythm of things. You know, for example, if you're hurt, but I still want to hold on to being a rodeo rider, or if I lost everything of my home, my husband, I hold on to that. I don't want it to let go. That kind of resistance sometimes is quite painful, and nature doesn't resist, right? It sort of goes in the rhythm it's supposed to be. So I always feel like these characters will find inspiration of healing in nature.
Yeah, it's about submitting to this thing, because seasons mm-hmm. change. And this reminds me, as you're talking about this, one of my favorite shots of yours is in this movie, or sequences, I mean to say, which, you know, the opening 6 or 7 minutes or so takes place in a wintry sort of low sunlight part of the world and time. And as Fern is driving and she drives into sunlight, we start to hear the score for the first time. And it's a beautiful way of sort of offering us the passage of time. I want you to talk about that sequence a little bit, because I think it's really kind of enchanting.
Yeah, I think being on the road long enough, you get these moments that I was trying to put into the film with the help of music and sound design, is that there is just a moment sometimes when the sound is in the right place and the road is a certain way and everything just feels like your life, and this is exactly where you should be. And life is moving in the perfect speed and towards the right direction. And that feeling, I think, for her to decide, I'm going to go to the desert, to really embrace this lifestyle for the first time, with the help of Ludovico's music coming in and the visual change, and also to see how different they are, is thinking about how long she's traveled to get that moment. It's a delicate moment that I'm glad you picked up.
No, I think it's really kind of wonderful, because for me, it's about that moment that so often happens in your movies, that there's a point where, in visual terms, it seems like anything could happen, both good and bad, that the whole world opens up. And it's so often about the way the sun hits the landscape. That feels like sunrise so often in these movies that you do. And I just wonder what it is about sunrises that you respond to so much.
Look, you have to, we follow rules. You know how many hours we can work. So either shoot sunrise or sunset. And it's better to wait than to chase. And who can get up in the morning that early? You have to be up at 4 to get a sunrise, right? Capture sunrise. So I think a lot of the sunrise is actually shot at sunset time. But either whether it's sunrise or sunset, those 40 minutes, especially the last 20, what you see is that you see the world blend together because of the way the light is. Where at 12 at noon, things are just has its own identity more. You know, the true colors are revealed. It's got sharp edges. And yet everything blends together. It's almost like it's a moment of union or something, because we're all in agreement that this day is going to end. This is the end of this moment, this day. And then we're all just going to give our best in that moment. And now sunrise is the same. It's saying goodbye to tonight. It's that those transitional moments. It could be literally one of the most profound moments in a person's life. Or when you're on the road, it could just be those little, it's hard to describe. But if we don't capture those moments, then I kind of, the audience could be like, what's so great about this? Why do I want to be on the road? It's because the folks that are being on the road has experienced this moment. That's what gave them so much strength when they have to shit in the bucket, that they are doing it. And it's very important our audience experience that to understand why Fern chooses this lifestyle in the end.
It's the treatment. My guest, who apparently picked the wrong profession if she doesn't want to get up early in the morning, is Chloe Zhao. Her new film as director is Nomadland. You're talking about a kind of freedom, in fact, people finding their freedom, which is a theme that you go back to again and again. And when people are wearing uniforms, especially like sort of fast food uniforms, and trapped inside, we really feel a sense of claustrophobia. And I'm just amazed that you can just, especially here, we really feel the differences between being just outside and sitting with like-minded people and feeling like the world is a welcoming place versus those jobs you were talking about that should be, there was a time with the province of teenagers, and now adults have to be them. We saw Brady doing it in The Rider, and now we're seeing people doing it here. And that idea of trying to find freedom and what it feels like when you're stuck inside is a really fascinating motif to me that you revisit.
I think it's an anxiety that I feel of how fast we human beings and our technology, our advancements have been shaping our planet. The ecological changes that has been done to us just in a short amount of time because our inventions, our technology. And as a species, we haven't changed that much. So I think that anxiety of being part of this big machine versus being in a natural rhythm of a natural world that our ancestors been part of since the beginning of time. I think that the key is balance, right? Because I am not saying that you should go back to a time where a plague can wipe out half of the population. You know, obviously there's great things technology brings, but we need to find a balance, because I don't think Fern and Brady is going to find the healing they need inside that supermarket. At the same time, that might be the only job they have left.
What happens too when you're wearing those uniforms, and this is something that stuck out for me here, is the way you're judged when people see you and those kinds of things. And there's this freedom of being around people who don't judge you for the way you look or what you're wearing or the car you drive or the way you live. And there is a kind of, I don't know if I want to say escape that the road offers in that way, at least the way it's depicted in your movie. But it does offer kind of a release from that sort of immediate judgment.
I tell you what that is. It's interesting because I have recently been thinking about Bass Reeves. You know, it's a project I was working on for a while. And Indian Territory, which is present-day Oklahoma. And that's the last of the Old West before it became Oklahoma. It became part of the United States and all the sort of institutionalized rules that is applied to it. Before that, there is this wildness where lawlessness that people from all walk of life gathered, right, in this very hostile environment in nature and trying to figure out where they all belonged. And it was very violent and it was very dangerous. But at the same time, the judgment part is very interesting. You mentioned that. They don't do that in the way that we're used to today, because they all have a common enemy, which is surviving in this element. And they don't know who runs the place either and how the society should be, because there was no rules, no law. And when it becomes part of an institution, and as time goes on, the society become much more settled. I mean, I'm coming from a very old country and grew up in one, England and China. There's things that are set in the society, class, you know, for example. But there's something about being on the road remind me of the Indian Territory at that time. You have to find your own rules. And then when a storm comes, you got to collaborate with the person next to you to take shelter, you know, because you're not going to see another person for a long time. There's something about that, people connecting on the basic human level, whether it's light or dark, is slowly going away in this very kind of defined modern society. I think some people don't like that. That's how people drop out.
I guess I was thinking too, I want to ask you about, because you work so often with actors who weren't conventionally trained as actors, what your first day of shooting with Fran McDormand was like.
First thing we ever shot for Nomadland was the reptile garden in South Dakota. So the first day really consists of Fran and Dave, you know, running around a reptile garden, petting turtles and playing with snakes and just, you know, looking at crocodiles and stuff. And we did shoot a scene, but that didn't make it into the film. I think we were having too much fun.
And were those her actual reactions, like reacting to that snake?
When the camera is on you, everyone will perform. Some are going to be a lot better than others. And I think there's authentically herself in it, but I think Fred knows what she's doing, you know. They know what they're doing. But I think they're so good at finding that nice balance between what appears to be them being themselves and what they're giving the camera. And that's why those two actors are so perfect for this project.
It's interesting, too, because one of the things that's so funny about watching Fran on screen is that oftentimes when an actor says goodbye, they'll linger. But Fran says, bye, she walks right out of the frame. Bye.
Well, I remember hanging out with Fran because we spent quite a lot of time together before figuring out who Fern is. I remember leaving a supermarket and then there was a free pile, like in the little open area where there's all these like free things. And then so Friday Media went there to rummage, you know, just to see if she could find anything. And I was watching her in that, in those piles and piles of stuff. And I thought of like Buster Keaton. I thought of like Chaplin when I was looking at it, the way she was moving. I just thought this has to be in the film somehow. Whether that's you, friend, or is it something that you do? I don't know. She always felt like her characters would become part of who she is out for all these years. She takes a little bit of them with her. And so who she is never completely who she is. But whatever it is, that aspect, we wanted, because we needed some humor in the film. You know, I think she herself is hilarious.
Must have been a little thrilling to you to have somebody who had been in those kind of landscapes before. I mean, it's interesting to see her surrounded by all the snow at the beginning and standing by the side of a road and to not be reminded of Fargo.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't think about how similar that opening image of her peeing by the side of the barbed wire fence, how that may evoke in a very popular image. You know what? That may just be exactly where they bury the money. That's exactly where they bury the money. I'm going to tell Joel that.
It's again, it's really interesting for me to watch. I mean, to have read the book and to see these characters like Swanky and Bob in real life. I mean, to just hear, to actually hear the voices, you know what I mean, as compared to reading them, but to hear them talk and to hear, again, we're talking about pride, how much pride they take in the way that they articulate their own stories. You know, you can hear when Swanky, the real person, talking to Fern about the way she needs to take care of her car. And you must have been just tickled to see that there is that kind of personal investment in the way that they talk about themselves and the way they speak.
I love how people who are in cities speak. You know, like I just love, even on the reservation for my first two films, I just love that, because I think we all sort of sound the same when we're constantly surrounded by people's voices. And when people are out there, they're Swanky. You know how much alone time she spends? I mean, she's on Facebook, but she's on her own a lot. And then there's something about the way she speaks and her voice. It hasn't been conformed into this thing that I've heard a million times when I turn on the TV, you know? I love it. I wish I could hear more of that.
Well, God, me too, because the first thing I wrote down, I don't often take notes on watching movies, but the first thing I wrote down 20 minutes into the film were just voices, and just underlined it three times, I mean, an exclamation point, because all these voices, the way these people sound, tell us something about who and what they are, don't they?
Yeah. I like that you take notes. That's nice. That's also the thing with a slower film. It allows you to take notes. Because you can look away when you look back and things are still the same.
That's why I do these things with you, Chloe, so I can learn something. We're out of time. You clearly have work to do. You know you're always welcome here. It's always so much fun to have you do the show. Thank you so much, and congratulations on the movie.
So much fun. Thank you for having me.
Of course, my pleasure. My guest is Chloe Zhao, whose new film is Nomadland. Recording engineer at KCRW is JC Swadek. Hi, JC. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by our producer, Rebecca Mooney. Hi, Rebecca. To better days, everybody. I'm Elvis Mitchell. Don't get any extra dreadlocks. It's The Treatment. To catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.